I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love.
We're not going anywhere. We ride here.
With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keurig. Presented by G2G Bars. On 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
All right, everybody, welcome to your Friday. It's Unrivaled, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell out today, filling in. Mitch Harper, BYU insider for KSLSports.com, and one of the guys I like to jam with the most in this freaking station. I love it. Mitch, thanks for coming in, man.
You bet, Alex. Always happy to be on, and we're going to have a lot of fun. It's a game day Friday for the Lady Utes who are in South Carolina. Big game against LSU. We got that on the television. So going to be a lot of fun today. Pro Day action to break down. I was down in Provo with BYU Pro Day. A lot of interesting observations from that. So let's have a lot of fun.
Mitch is fresh off it. What he's not telling you, you're trying to sound all buttoned up, Mitch. You've been running ragged all freaking day. Like, he's in Provo, and then he's like, I'm on my way. I'm like, I know. Look, don't worry about it. Just come in. And let's just have a good time on the show. That's the whole point. And so that's where we're at. Miami, by the way, moved on out of that other Greenville regional. The
Cavender Twins.
Cavender Twins versus Alyssa Peely. I like that matchup next if they can get past the do you call them Lady Tigers? I don't know. Like, does everyone just say Lady? I don't really like when they just throw Lady in front of all
I think that's now – that's very like 1998.
Let's do away with it.
It's 2023. We can't – we probably shouldn't say the Lady Running Utes or the Lady Tigers, Bayou Bengals.
But I know for a fact that there's a person in this room that owns a Lady Vols light blue sweater.
And it's not me.
But Lady Vols is different because, you know, you think of Pat Summitt. Like, yes. That's actually a bigger brand than Tennessee Bat, like actual, like the men's, you know, team. So there's the, although they made a nice little run before they got eliminated, so. We've got tons to go on today, and so we're going to have the cut here as we jump into the top of the program. And so let's do it. Let's get officially started on our Friday. Right here, it's the cut.
The unquestioned. Undeniable. Unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Ain't nothing like it.
All right, The Cut presented by, and our show presented by G2G Bars. All natural ingredients, no preservatives, plenty of protein. G2G Bars, perfect for anybody who needs that quick, tasty, and nutritious boost. Go to G2GBar.com. You can also find them in the refrigerated section at Costco, Associated Foods, etc. Oh, by the way, Mitch, there's some in the fridge outside. You can grab a G2G Bar out there, bro. Those are complimentary for filling in on the show for Scott. Normally, they're a dollar. That you have to pay straight to me. But today you can have one for filling in on the show. Okay, we got a couple of things going. And so Pro Day, I want to know, because everybody is all up and down about this whole thing, Mitch, where BYU is going to go to this Big 12 I don't know if you know this, BYU is going to the Big 12, but they're going to go to the Big 12 Pro Day that has been combined now for an NFL package TV situation where you're going to be able to just get all the Pac-12 teams and the guys who I guess are going to get invited, because the way that they do it now, I would assume, would be like a more localized version, your conference version of the combine, and that requires an invite. Yeah. And that means that the 15 names that BYU had at Pro Day today would likely get cut down. And I know a lot of people probably would like to have those guys get their looks, but I'm a big fan, actually, of the Big 12 centralized Pro Day, something that we'll be able to kind of watch. And then you're going to get, I mean, realistically, BYU's Pro Day today with 15 guys, mm-hmm. how many of those guys would have been invited to a Big 12 mini combine, I guess, that they would have after the combine that starts up next year?
I'd say three. I'd say the big three and Jaren Hall, Blake Freeland, and Puka Nacua.
Yeah.
I think those would have been the three guys. And I do think that this conference wide Big 12 Pro Day will be a good thing, because I think what was noteworthy, I thought today, Alex, was when, you know, Zach Wilson threw at Pro Day a couple years ago, it was the who's who of NFL personnel and executives inside the indoor practice facility. And I wasn't expecting, you know, GMs, but I thought maybe there might be a chance for some head coaches to get a second glimpse at Jaren Hall, because he's at one of the most important positions at quarterback, and that just wasn't the case. And, you know, Kentucky's Will Levis, he had his pro day today, and I think a lot of the notable NFL people were in Lexington for that. But I think a conference-wide pro day in the Big 12, for someone like Jaren Hall, you're throwing in front of the GMs, the head coaches. Those people are going to come.
Right.
Whereas instead, this was just the scouts. I'm still not sure if all 32 teams were there. I didn't see all 32. I know at Utah, they had 31 of the 32. I just, off of freehand counting, I don't believe I saw all 32. But still, you know, I thought
they had parking spots for all 32, I noticed, on their social media.
But I think that's something that, you know, you might take away the chances for players that didn't get much run in game days at their BYU career. But I think it'll amplify the stage for a Jaren Hall to impress more personnel hands-on, because I thought that was kind of telling of where Jaren, Puka, and to a lesser degree Blake Freeland stand in this draft process, is that these GMs and executives are not there in Provo. Because if they were ready to spend expensive draft capital on those guys, they would be there, and they would be interviewing those players.
Like Zach Wilson, John Beck was there running the overseeing his quarterback, right? A guy who he's been working with for a long time. And Jaren, we have a couple clips from him, a couple from Puka Nacua from today. So here's what Jaren said about what he's trying to accomplish on a day like today down in Provo at Pro Day.
Just the ability to make every throw off platform on the run, just to show some mobility in the pocket. Just small things that can separate me from other people and show off my skill set. Combine, you threw everything under center, threw it all in the pocket. So today we just want to do a lot on the run to show the mobility side of things.
So he had an agenda. I want to go to the mobility side of things, show what people I can do outside of the pocket. Do teams want to see that, though? Or are they going, I want more of that? Or do they look and go, I like that you can scramble. I like that you can get around, but we're not looking for the dual threat quarterback necessarily. Or would a team like, I know his name's been thrown out there with the possibility of maybe Seattle picking him up. Yeah. That might be a nice team for him because they're used to that kind of a system. Is that the kind of thing that he was trying to accomplish? So you go, hey, there are a handful of teams that would love to see that side of me, and they might like me more if I do this, and I would have a little bit more of a shot maybe to get picked up in that fourth, fifth, sixth round. Is that kind of the idea?
Definitely. And I thought that, you know, his NFL combine performance, he didn't perform the best.
Right.
And I think he needed to hit it out of the park with this passing script just to kind of let people know what we're talking about. I mean, when you think of Zach Wilson, that rocket throw he made, that was the stage Jaren Hall was talking about. And he did have a similar throw to that one. His very last throw to Puka Nacua, it was an off-platform throw, deep ball to Puka, and it was a great ball, and it was a great catch by Puka. So Jaren showed a little bit of the arm strength, but he's never going to be that guy that has that cannon for an arm. I mean, he's got a better arm than I think scouts and, you know, NFL draft nicks maybe give him credit for, but I think that he's going to be that guy that stays on script. He's going to be a leader. He's going to be some. I mean, I asked Kalani about that today, and he tells NFL teams, that's what he's been saying, is just that you're getting an incredible leader. And I think that's going to be something that wins over a lot of people, to where if you're in the sixth round or seventh round or maybe fifth round, you say to Jaren Hall, like, we can trust this guy's going to come in and be a positive influence in the organization. And when you say Seattle, you know, Geno Smith's not the long-term answer. He could maybe be that guy in 2 or 3 years, Jaren Hall. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes. I still feel, though, right now, Alex, that he's locked in kind of as a day three guy. And I feel like his 40 time, too, was something that really doesn't elevate a stock. It was solid, a 4.62 unofficial, but it wasn't anything that's just like catches the attention. Like, I got to, you know, go up and get Jaren Hall.
See, I don't know if you need that, too, because I do, like, look at guys who are effective runners as quarterbacks. Like, and the run first thing is you can't do that anymore, I don't think. And I was thinking about Russell Wilson's combine numbers, because I remember thinking the same exact thing about what his numbers were at the combine. I'll have to go back, but I wanted to see, because I remember that it wasn't fantastic either. His was a 4.58. So, I mean, similar number, but I mean, like, people aren't going to question whether or not Jaren is athletic, you know, yep. And they're not going to ask if he's fast, really. I mean, in the end, these guys are looking for somebody who's going to be a little bit of a difference maker, somebody who hopefully could sit behind a guy, maybe learn a thing or two, could come in and be effective for a minute if they were asked to do it. So here's what Jaren said, though, about the 40, because you can opt not to do it and just go, I have what I have on paper. People have seen me at both the Senior Bowl and also at the Combine, but he chose to run it. Here's why he said he wanted to do that.
I was just healthy today. You know, I felt better about it. My ankle felt recovered. Still didn't have a ton of time to prep for it, but I just want to show that I'm an athletic guy, just confirm whether it was on tape. Tried not to press too much about it, but just wanted to show that I can kind of do everything I need to.
The thing that's tough about that answer is, too, Mitch, is I think that that's one of the knocks, too, is how much of a stretch of health has he had? I mean, there's always something. Every year it seemed like there was a ding here, a nick there that kept him out of action. And that was always – that's always – and Puka Nacua, same thing. Scott brought something up the other day where he goes, wide receivers don't get hurt this often. And he's been hurt a lot, it seems like. Are those the kind of things that GMs look at and go – He's fragile. What kind of an effect does that have on guys making decisions?
I think it definitely has an impact. And I think the 40 time, too, with Jaren, I think maybe took on a grander stage, in my view, because he's viewed as being a guy that's not elite in one particular thing. Whereas Zach had that elite characteristic of just the cannon for an arm, and that's what really separated him. And he was also in a COVID class that was far much smaller than one that Jaren Hall's in now. So I think that that's where the 40 took on a grander stage, I think, for Jaren Hall. And I think that's one of the reasons why he wanted to run, because I think it could have elevated his stock. And I think maybe it did. A 4.62 is solid. It's an unofficial time. But I think that, you know, the injuries with Puka, it was funny watching him do the vertical jump today, because you're right. I mean, every season, even when he was at Washington, his availability was not always there because of injuries. But during the vertical jump, he, you know, kind of knocked his hand a little bit into one of those sticks that you try to hit to count your inches in the vertical. And just like, Puka's always getting just kind of banged up a little bit. But man, Puka, though, is the type that not only he shines on this stage, but when you watch the film on him when he is fully healthy, like that Boise State game, that's when Puka Nacua is at his best. And you hope for his sake. That's what, you know, NFL teams ultimately turn to, and they invest some draft capital into Puka.
Speaking of Puka Nacua, let's listen to what he said about there are some specific teams. And, you know, a lot of times people say, hey, what teams have you been talking to? And guys will go, you know, I've had a lot of conversations with a lot of teams out there. But I was glad that he actually got a little bit specific about some of these teams who maybe want to get a second look at him.
I've met with the Seahawks and the Patriots probably the most. I've met with the Chiefs and the Cardinals and the Jets. I feel like I play the game super physical, so they love my physicality. And then also this year, I feel like I didn't track the deep ball as well. So today, that's why that last catch of the day was big for me to make sure I know. I feel like I can track the ball well down the field, but trying to make sure I can continue. I left my feet a lot this year, so staying on the ground and staying healthy. I've dealt with some injuries and stuff, so trying to get big for the physical game that we play, but then also stay as fast and explosive as I can.
Where does he realistically go, Mitch, on draft day? If you're a Puka fan, Maybe you're thinking he's a second, third round guy, but that's just not the case. So where does he end up?
I think it's sixth to seventh round, or maybe undrafted. And I think it's just because of the position too.
Yeah, so many guys.
I think like the wide receiver, they just have so many quality pass catchers, and they almost fall off trees. I know that it's not the case, but just it does feel that way in a sense with football and with how much of an emphasis there is in the passing game. There's just so many good receivers. I mean, you see so many times in NFL seasons where an NFL team will call someone up that maybe was expected to be on the retirement line. They just call them up, and then they are inserted to a team
right midway
through. That just happens. So there's this feeling around wide receivers that you can always find someone that can add value to your 53-man roster. And I think that kind of hurts Puka a little bit, but I mean, I've always said that I feel like he's one of the best receivers in BYU football history, and because of his talent, he was amazing when he was coming out of Orem High School. He went to Washington and ends up at BYU, and I think he got better as a football player at BYU, but just the injuries limited his availability, and you know, I just don't think there was any sort of metrics today that were wow, but he had a 10-1 in the broad jump, which was, I thought, a pretty solid number for him. 4.59 unofficial in the 40, which, you know, good. I mean, solid number. But I just think that he's probably a late day three guy. And I think if whatever team gives him the opportunity, he's going to make the most of it. And I would not bet against Puka Nacua, because that whole family, they've had success in the game of football. And I would not bet against Puka Nacua finding a way to stick in the NFL and carving out a career.
It says something when you're like, is one of the most electric guys you've seen in program history, considering the wideouts that have come out and guys who've been so good for BYU over the years. But I don't think anybody will say otherwise that he is one of the most athletic dudes who's been at that position, has been as electric and as exciting as anybody you've seen at that position. You just didn't see a ton comparatively to some of these guys who are, you know, game in and game out, played 40 games, you know, that kind of thing, had a couple of 1,000-yard seasons. So I'm excited for the future of these guys. I do love that they are answering just – and this is something Scott always talks about, and you hear Hans talk about too, where they're like, they will dig in, man. They will ask you some insane questions. They will have medical histories on you that you didn't know existed, and they find it. Here's what Puka said about how crazy some of these combine questions actually get.
They knew every answer they were going to ask. Like, every question they had, they knew the answer. They just were waiting for me to say it, like, make sure I gave them the clear answer that they knew was coming. But I guess maybe then them other knowing, like, my whole girlfriend's name, like, her Instagram. Like, they were like, I think it was the Patriots I was interviewing. They're like, so who's going to move out with you if we draft you to New England? I'm like, oh, maybe one of my brothers. And they're like, oh, so, like, your girlfriend Hallie Iono's not going to come? And I was like, I don't know. Probably, like, maybe. I don't know. I haven't really thought about that. And he's like, she's got about, like, 30,000 Instagram followers. And I was like, he's like, yeah, that's about triple as yours. And I was like, okay, we're insulting me now. Like, I didn't know. I thought this was a job interview for me. And he's like, yeah, like, her brother's in, like, Netflix movies and stuff like that. I'm like, yo, are you asking about me or my girlfriend? Like, what the heck's going on? Like, I get it. Like, yeah, she's my girlfriend, so I'm excited. Like, yeah, I know this stuff about her, too. But now I feel like you're insulting me. Like I'm not cool enough. Like,
you find yourself wondering, how do they get this intel?
Yeah, I was like, yo, like, I'm like, dang, I need to stay off Instagram now. Like, I'm worried.
I love the I mean, that's insane, right?
Yeah.
I guess they have to ask questions, but, like, what is that line of questioning?
These scouts are getting deep in the weeds,
but what
man.
Would they try to find? What would they want to know about that? Be like, she's going to be.
How,
like,
serious is the relationship is my thought, I guess.
Maybe he gets his heart broken partway through the season and he's in the tank. Or is it like, we want to avoid a Brittany Mahomes situation, right? Maybe they're going, she's wearing a lot of yoga pants and kind of getting a little bit too much attention here. Would she be trying to steal the limelight from you? Could we rely on her in the suite not to be trash-talking people up in the stands? Like, that is the weirdest line of questioning. But again, it's also what they do, because they want to find out what kind of a person you are or what you're going to bring to the organization. I guess. I mean, it's just so funny, the stuff that they do ask. I saw that you liked this post at 3 a.m., and that's kind of a controversial figure. I saw you like this political rant that was going on over here. It's like, no, thank you.
The whole process is so strange, Alex, because we're watching, you know, these 40 drills and vertical jumps, broad jump, and it's like you're watching a guy in Chris Brooks, a running back, who he showed pretty well today, and he's just basically in underwear. He's got nothing else on. It's like, how does this translate to the field and Sundays in the fall? I don't know. I mean, it shows the explosiveness and the athleticism. I get all that. But the whole dynamic, this whole process is kind of weird when you kind of just scale it back and go, yeah, just a bunch of guys running in their underwear, and they're asking, and then these teams are asking questions about their Instagram followers and their girlfriends. Like, is this football related again, or what are we talking about here?
Probably not. At that point, I think that the scouts have a thing between them too, where they go, "Dude, watch me ask this. I'm going to ask him about his girlfriend." All you're telling me is that scout is you got creepy on Instagram with Puka Nacua's girlfriend. Like, that's all you told me, is that at some point at 1 in the morning, you were in a hotel room and you're scrolling through her and you went, ooh.
And, of course, it was the Patriots.
Bill Belichick's like, I want you to ask about their girlfriends. How many Instagram followers does she have?
Puka does seem like a Patriots receiver,
yes,
though.
Yes,
he does seem like that N'Keal Harry, like that type of build.
They'll exact some amount of athletic. Like, they will get everything out of him if he goes there. Yep. I love that the Seahawks are talking to him, though.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be fun if he and Jaron both went to Seattle? It'd be fun. All right, let's take a break here. Advanced Window Products, sponsoring this portion of the show. From their factory to your front door in 8 weeks. Affordable windows, guaranteed. Check them out, advancedwindowsusa.com. advancedwindowsusa.com. Let's get a couple $1,000 off. You go there and get it done. Let's figure it out with these guys. They are so good at their job. Check them out, advancedwindowsusa.com. We will come back. We've got so much more and so much fun stuff to jam about on a Friday. And Matt Biamonte,
I know that guy.
Yes, the co-host of Cougar Sports Saturday with our own Mitch Harper. He'll join the program. I want to see what his thoughts were on BYU's pro day. Matt will give it to us more straight. We can't get straight answers out of Mitch sometimes, so we're going to get it straight from Matt. So we'll come back. More to go on a Friday. Stay right here with us as we get you ready also for Jazz Bat.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Basketball coming up right after our program as well. Stay with us right here at 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Attention. This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery.
Attention.
With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
Presented by G2G Bars. This is 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's your Friday. It is Unrivaled, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. You are fully into the weekend. Stay safe on those dang roads out there. My heavens, it's a mess. It's been a mess all day. And you know what? It's supposed to be messy tomorrow, Sunday, Monday. And you know what? I'm here for it. Because if every day of snow, Mitch brings us one fewer report on how dire the water situation is, the worst I hear is this one too. By the way, it's just been dumping record numbers, obviously, since 1980, right, or 1982, or whatever that bad flood season was. And it doesn't matter because you saw people come out of woodworks and go, "Yeah, but we still need like 17 more of these winters in a row to even make a dent." And you're like, "Gosh, can we be positive for 1 second here?" My heavens. Hey, Ute women in the Sweet 16 taking on LSU. They're down 13-11 with 4 minutes left in the first quarter. And Jeremiah Jensen and Michelle Bodkin both in Greenville, South Carolina. So we're going to have JJ right as they go half. We'll get JJ on the phone and give us an update on the Utes and their number two seed. And
great
they
battle.
Get to that Elite Eight.
In the post with Alyssa Peely and Angel Reese.
Yes.
Great battle in this
I'll take Alyssa Pealey every time. Look at that. Box out.
Utah, they win this game. They're probably going to the Final Four.
Let's hope, because I think in the next round they'd be taking on Miami, right?
Yeah, they take on the Cavender Twins in Miami.
The Cavender Twins. Now, how many Instagram followers do they have now?
They've got millions.
I know.
I saw them live. I actually covered a game with them.
When they played Fresno? BYU. Oh.
They played against BYU with Fresno. Yeah. They're good. They're ballers. They're legit.
All right. Here's what we've got. Matt Biamonte, Cougar Sports Saturday, KSLSports.com. You can see him covering the Cougs. He and Mitch do a masterful job. And now I'm going to make it awkward and bring them both on the program here. So, Matt, how you doing, man?
Doing great. Loving the snow. I love not being able to get where I want to go to.
Reasonable. I knew you'd find something negative about all this. You can work from home, dude. You have the most.
I prefer, actually, to work from home.
I know. So quit the complaining. You're like, I can't get around in the snow. Yes, you can. We need the water.
Ask Mitch, how much fun was it getting to the indoor practice facility this morning?
Oh, it was brutal. It was a nightmare drive. I was just getting all the traffic updates here on the station. It was just like, when is this going to clear up? See, it got a little bit better in Utah County.
Yeah, I love that. I love the idea of like the Jacksonville Jaguars, like two or three guys in like a rented Altima trying to drive down to Provo to like get it done. They're like, what are we? Oh my gosh, it's like we're in Buffalo.
Matt and I were talking one of the new BYU QBs down at Pro Day today, and he's just like, I'm not used to this weather. He's a new guy. He's like, this is just not good weather. He's like, I do not like this. And we're like, hey, this is kind of a new thing, these sort of winters that carry into spring, but hopefully it eases up soon and we get some clear skies eventually.
Yeah. Pro day today, Matt. I think that everybody can agree way too many guys were working out for the scouts. That will be whittled down, of course.
You would take a negative angle here, Alex.
See? Don't tell me. You didn't yawn one time when one of these guys goes out there and you went, oh, boy, I don't know if this dude's going to have a future in the league. Like, let's stick with that accounting degree. But I wondered, though, with all the guys who are working out and with all the stuff that is going on and you know, BYU TV blew it out big time, and they're not going to be able to do this in the future. Is it a better move to move to that pro day that they're going to have that's going to be an NFL, Big 12 kind of collaboration?
It'll be a better move for the guys that have an actual chance to be drafted, but it's a worse move for the guys who probably wouldn't have gotten a free agent deal, but maybe they wow someone and get a mini camp invite or a free agent deal and they have a chance. Because there's no, you know, I just don't see how you have a pro day. Like BYU, I think, had like 15 dudes today. Every team from the Big 12 is not going to send 15 dudes. That'd be over 100 players. That'd be a multi-day event. So I think there's going to be a limit to how many guys you can send to the Big 12 pro day. And it might just close the door for like a Jonah Trenuman from years past who just had a crazy fast. Like this year, I think Mitch would agree, Caleb Hayes had some impressive numbers. A defensive back who had been there for 2 years. He had a 40-inch vertical, sub 4.4, unofficial 40 time. It was like 4.31 was the unofficial time. Those kind of numbers could warrant a mini camp deal, and who knows what happens. And when you move to the Big 12, does a guy like Caleb Hayes get an invite to that event? Because like Jaren Hall, the quarterbacks, like they're going to get invited. Blake Freeland, those dudes, they're going to get invited to the Big 12. Does Caleb Hayes get invited though, because at this pro day he's earned himself an opportunity that maybe wasn't there when the season ended?
Well, I was thinking too about that, because it was, what about the guys who are a year or two removed and they're, you know, is Cam Newton going to show up to the Big 12 pro day next year and go, hey man, like do they invite those guys? Yeah. Because there are a handful of dudes that probably have business being there, and the coaches usually throw them a bone and say, hey, yeah, come work out at our place. Does that stuff go away too?
I think so. And that would be a shame, too, if, you know, like Brandon Whedon shows up at 40 years old. I can still throw it quick.
40.
From Oklahoma State. And some quarterback gets the axe to make room for old Brandon Whedon or something like that.
You're giving me great content ideas for the offseason, Matt, to think of every Big 12's like famous Cam Newton like alum to go through a pro day. I'm curious, Matt, you know, with what we saw from Jaren Hall today, how do you feel about his draft prospects now? Because I know that before that four-game losing streak last fall for BYU, I think you and I both kind of agreed that he could have been maybe a late first, second round. I mean, that could have been maybe a really optimistic, but it was trending that way. What do you feel after seeing what he did at Pro Day today? How do you feel about Jaren's draft prospects now?
I feel the same as I did before I went in. I think the Senior Bowl hurt Jaren Hall more than it helped him. I don't think that he played poorly, but his early exit didn't allow him an opportunity to play in that game, and we come to find out later that he wasn't healthy. And so I think the health at the Senior Bowl, which didn't allow him to put his best stuff out there, plus he was a little banged up at the end of the year. And then in the Pro Day today, he was good. A low 4.6 is a really good time for a quarterback, and he threw the ball well. But I don't think those numbers were so eye-popping that I was like, oh, like this dude has maybe earned himself an extra couple rounds. So after the Senior Bowl, I would say he's anywhere between a 3 to a 6. 3 being at the high end, just because maybe there's one team out there that loves his film and they're going to take a chance on him because they believe in him. That's certainly in play for Jaren Hall. But I don't think he's done anything post the season to where he's jumped himself up another tier. So it's kind of unfortunate that injury in the Stanford game has lingered so long, because the Senior Bowl was a place that he had every opportunity to increase his stock, and that just didn't happen. And then today he did enough to stay where he is. It's not like he's going to slip even more from the Pro Day, but I didn't think there was anything from today's Pro Day that necessarily would blow your mind and change how you feel about him.
Matt, as you see some of the other guys that are working out, it's one thing. When you said that about, like, yeah, I don't really change my mind about what we had seen about it, is that why extra guys, like other GMs, aren't showing up and getting extra out of it, because they're going, we kind of have seen what we've seen, and at this point, if you do the Senior Bowl, you do the Combine, like, we don't need to see your Pro Day too?
Yeah, I think there's certainly some of that. Like, every once in a while, you'll have a Pro Day like Zach Wilson's or even Will Levis's today, where they throw some crazy passes, and maybe someone who was like, we really like him, but we're not sure. And then you just get pushed over the top by a crazy Pro Day. But one thing I do think has happened over the past couple of years in the NFL is that I do think there is a trend of going back to the film and not necessarily putting more stock into the Combine or into a Pro Day. So I just feel like at this point in the process, with guys like Jaren, Puka, Blake Freeland, all draftable guys, the teams that are in on him, they come here to do some due diligence. And it's probably – Pro Days are probably even more valuable for interviews and watching interactions and just having off-the-record conversations than it is one throw in a script with John Beck that changes someone's opinion. So – and that's the way that I think it should be. Like, Jaren Hall, Blake Freeland, Puka Nacua, these dudes put great film – with their play in the field their past couple of years. If the teams that love them, I think, will fall back on that and say, you know, Jaren Hall played great against the elite competition on BYU's schedule the last 2 years. He has outstanding numbers. He takes care of the football. He has a high yards per completion. Like, that's what matters. The Pro Day doesn't matter. Senior Bowl doesn't really matter. So I think at this point, the teams that come to BYU's Pro Day are just – doing some due diligence, and maybe there's a gem that can find. But at this stage in the NFL draft, I think a lot of the work is done, and you're just dotting the I's and crossing the T's on potential prospects.
Gazing to the crystal ball, Matt, 5 years from now, which of these guys is going to still be in the league and having the best NFL career? Who do you think? Who would you put your bet on?
I'd put my bet on Jaren Hall. I just think everything he did the past 2 years in actual football games is what absolutely translates to the NFL. When you have his first year as a starter, he had a 4-1 TD to INT ratio, which was very good. And that had wins against Utah, Arizona State, Washington State. Like, it was a very good year. And then his follow-up year, he increases that to 6-1. Like, that's one of the most important things about being an NFL quarterback, is taking care of the football, making sound decisions. That's what Jaren Hall is to a T. And I think his type of game is exactly where the quarterback position is right now in the NFL. You got to be mobile, but you got to have a throw-first mentality. You have to be able to throw on the run, make good decisions, take care of the football. I mean, how many bad decisions can you think of from Jaren Hall throughout his career? 2 or 3? There was that bad play against Arizona State that resulted in Tyler Allgeier making a heroic play. That's like the obvious one. And I think there might have been a bad
the Notre Dame the Notre Dame pick at the very first that very first
the
throw,
Notre
I
Dame
guess.
Pick on the first play Liberty for sure. Too. But
oh yeah,
there's only a handful of bad decisions. He played hundreds of snaps, and we're talking about four or five really boneheaded plays because the dude takes care of the football. So Jaren Hall to me, I think, is going to translate beautifully to the NFL.
Matt Biamonte, you can hear he and Mitch Harper tomorrow on KSL News Radio for Cougar Sports Saturday, noon to 3. And then you guys, I know you're looking forward. You do what I do, the most amazing week of all of all year long, general conference weekend where you can take a break from Cougar Sports Saturday. One Saturday off every 6 months. That's what we're going to do for you. By the way, LSU's head coach wearing a feather boa that is sewn into a blazer jacket on the sidelines.
Her swag is incredible.
There is an amazing subreddit that is called I'm the Main Character. Her team does not matter at this point. This lady wants everybody to see her on the sidelines. I didn't see what the quarter ended up being. I think they're either up by – it might be tied to the quarter. They were sent to the line, I think, with – LSU was sent to the line, and the Utes were up just by a point before that. So I didn't see how it ended up. But it's a very closely contested game down in South Carolina. As soon as – that game goes final or goes to halftime, we're going to get Jeremiah Jensen on the horn here with us, give us his thoughts on that first half. In the meantime, let's take a quick break. We will come back, and we are going to jam a little bit more. It's a weekend. What are the odds? Next, we're going to make Mitch Harper participate in this one, and we'll give you the odds for what's going to happen this weekend. Much, much more to go. Stay with us, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
What are the odds?
Okay, sir, the bet is to you.
All in, baby!
You'll know exactly. More or less.
What's going to happen? This is 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
All right, welcome back. It is Unrivaled. 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Happy Friday to you. Thanks for hanging out with us. I want to thank Mitch Harper for hanging out with me all day. Thanks for hanging out, Mitch.
You bet.
Now get to work. again, the pink feather boa from the head coach from LSU.
Kim Mulkey.
You know what she is? Kim Mulkey is the Eric Musselman of the tournament. Like, remember how Eric Musselman, his team wins, upsets Kansas. He takes his shirt off.
She's must all, bus.
Yeah, she's like, you know what? I think these girls are getting way too much attention with this NIL stuff. Hold my blazer. Puts on a pink feather boa. All right. Men, ReMedicals, Utah's only physician-owned operated wellness clinic offering ED treatments that are discreet, non-invasive, and customized to your needs. ReMedical, renew, restore, reclaim. Visit ReMedical.com today. All right, so what are the odds, Mitch? You know how this game works. We give you a scenario, or you give me a scenario, however it wants to go. And you can make one up on the fly. If you have, these are all just suggestions. If you've got one in your head you want to do, you bring it up. So. Okay. And then you give me a jersey number on top of it just for a bonus point, if you have one in hand. I don't want to force it, okay?
Okay.
What are the odds that, since we're watching it, Utah tops LSU, they get to the Elite Eight. Would that be their first Elite Eight ever? It's got to be something, right?
I believe so. I mean, they haven't been to the Sweet 16 since 06, so it's been a minute for Utah women's hoops. They've never been to the Final Four, so I got to imagine it'd be the farthest they've ever been. You know, I would still probably put it under 50%, but I'll go 45%. They're up by three right now, and they just had Angel Reese, the LSU star, get her second foul.
Nice.
With 8 minutes left in the second quarter. I think this is a 50-50 game. I mean, LSU's the favorite, but I'll go slight edge still to LSU, 45% for the Utes. But they're looking good right now. I gotta give them credit. They're playing well. They're not gonna get rolled like LSU did to Michigan last week.
I'm watching this. It's a frenetic pace right now. Like it's
a lot of clanks right now.
Lots of turnovers. Like lots of not even unforced errors. It's just like teams getting those extra hands in. It's kind of funny. I'm gonna go higher than that. I'm gonna go with a. Let me see here. I'm gonna go with a Mean Joe Green 70%.
Okay.
70%. All right. What are the odds, Jaren Hall? I'm going to put it right on the edge. Actually, you know what? I'm going to say, what are the odds he actually gets drafted? Because his draft grade is like, what, a sixth round kind of a situation there?
Probably fifth or sixth.
Yeah, so if he's there, But guys who are sixth-round guys could just, I mean, could very well be interchangeable with undrafted guys. It's not that they're bad when they don't get drafted. Mm-hmm. Some teams are like, I think he'll still be there, and we can get him at as an undrafted guy. Yeah. They'll still pay him, right? And they'll still get – sometimes in some cases, that guaranteed money they get off those undrafted free agent contracts end up being more than what they get in the seventh round. So what are the odds he gets drafted at all?
I'm saying it's still good. I'm going to say 98%.
Wow.
I still think he's going to get drafted. I feel pretty confident in that. I think he finds a way, even in the seventh round. Like I would be shocked if Jaren Hall does not get drafted. And if he doesn't get drafted, that really raises the question, should he have came back to BYU? Because he had the opportunity to come back in year one of the Big 12, and I bet he could have made some money in NIL that would have exceeded an undrafted free agent contract. So I would be stunned if he goes undrafted. I'm going to say 98%.
Okay.
What about you?
I'll go lower just because there's so much that happens on these draft weekends, and it's just insane. You can't predict what these teams are going to do. You know, I think that it's lower. I'm going to say it's a Blake Freeland 71%. Is he 71?
Yeah,
he's 71%. That's Blake good. Freeland.
That's fair.
So it's still high, but I could see it. I could see him dropping out of the draft, and there's only 256 spots or whatever it is, 266 spots. It's so dang hard.
And what's interesting too about this draft class with QBs, there's so many coveted QBs at the top of the class, and then you pair it up with a lot of teams have already identified who their quarterbacks are, and Jaren's going to come into a franchise and be, you know, the second or third wheel, whatever it may be. But it almost feels like a lot of teams have their kind of quarterback pecking order already in place, and they're all chasing those Anthony Richardson, Will Levis, C.J. Stroud, Bryce Young, that type. And then there's a big drop after that. So, I mean, I just still feel like some team is going to take Jaren. I mean, because there's just moments in his career where his speed, his ability to avoid turnovers, his ball security, his leadership, I just think that's enough that's going to get him drafted. But you know, you're right, though. The NFL draft, when you think you know, it goes completely sideways. But I'm still remaining confident.
Okay. Let's go to the Utah side of things. What are the odds that Dalton Kincaid gets picked in round one?
I'm going to go with, I'll say 66%. I think that's, you know, gosh, why do I say those type of numbers? Because then I have to come up with a jersey. 66, yeah, I can't think of a jersey, but I'll say 66. What about you?
Who is that? Who is that? Was Ray Nitschke 66? I want to know. That's coming up to my head. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, there's like some. There was a Packer, wasn't he? That was a 66.
Yeah. Oh. Yes. I'm seeing him. I'm seeing him in the ice bowl. Who was it?
And you got Vince Lombardi. What the hell's going on out there?
We'll have to come up with some 66s. I'm going to go with it higher. I think that people are starting to fall in love with him more, and it's crazy because he's had not to do very much work, and you know, he didn't have to do the combine. He's been injured, and but he just like that tape just keeps jumping out at people. I'm going to go with a full on Howie Long 75%. There you go. All right, let's take the break here. Trajan Wealth bringing you this portion of the program. Your local trusted financial fiduciaries. 801-899-7600. 801-899-7600, or their website, TrajanWealth.com. That's TrajanWealth.com. We come back, we're going to chat with Matt Zemek, TrojansWire.com. He's going to give us some insight on this USC team. We're previewing, of course, some of these teams that are taking on Utah this next year here. So, more to go. 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keurig, presented by G2G Bars on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. So.
Hey, everybody. Welcome on in. It's Unrivaled, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keurig, Mitch Harper filling in for Scott Mitchell, who's got a little bit of a break just for the day. We're going to let him go down.
Good for Scott.
Yeah, he's going to a concert, man. He's nice. He's like a kid again.
He going to the Taylor Swift concert in Vegas?
Yeah, no. I won't tell you what concert it is. But I will say that it is not Taylor Swift. It's not T Swifty. And I will say I'm jealous of people who have Taylor Swift tickets.
I'd go.
I'll go right now.
I'd love that concert.
Oh, for sure. I love how you're just – look, Mitch will admit it. Some guys will try to hide their Taylor Swift fans. Not Mitch Harper. Not Mitch Harper. He's pumping Midnights, the album, all day, man. I mean, he came in singing Taylor Swift into the studio. That's what I like about him.
Said I'm the anti-hero.
Let's get into the cut here at the top of the program. We got Matt Zemek from Trojans Wire joining us. Love when Matt joins us on the program, so let's kick it all off right here.
The other question. Undeniable. Unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Ain't nothing like it.
All right, the cut is always presented by G2G Bars. All natural ingredients, no preservatives, plenty of protein. G2G Bars, perfect for anybody who needs that quick, tasty, nutritious boost. Costco, Associated Foods, Holiday Oil, Maverick, you can find it all there in the refrigerated section. So there you go. Joining us on the program, Matt Zemek, covering the Trojans for Trojans Wire. Matt, we got to sneak in all the time we can before you guys head off to the Big Ten and you get all big for your britches and everything. So we just love having you on, man. Thanks for being with us.
Well, hopefully we haven't been too big for our britches over the past year, but I know some Utah fans would disagree with that. But, you know, we're trying. And, you know, you guys punched us in the mouth a couple times, so... Like, you know, if there are USC fans who are acting too big for their britches, well, they shouldn't be because they got served a heaping helping of crow twice.
How on earth are the Trojans and even the Utes, for that matter, like trying to win the Pac-12 this year? Am I insane to think that this is as strong as the league has been in a decade plus?
It has to be. Like, I would go back to 2014. Like that was a year when you had Marcus Mariota and Oregon at the top of the conference, but you also had UCLA very much in the mix. Arizona was good. You know, USC was a threat, and you know, and Stanford. You know, Stanford it didn't have a great season in 2014, but like it was still a nuisance. And you know, that Stanford win really was over UCLA late in the season. Like the Bruins still haven't recovered from that. Like that was one of the most damaging losses in the history of UCLA football. So like you had a lot of different names, a lot of different teams in the mix that particular season. So like, yeah, if you have to go back almost a decade, you know, that's kind of an indication. Like all, you could also pick 2016 when you had Washington going to the playoff and you had USC with Sam Darnold beating Penn State in the Rose Bowl, and Colorado being good under Mike McIntyre that one year. So, yeah, you'd have to go back several years for sure to find this kind of depth and quality spread across the Pac-12.
Matt, where do you see USC as spring ball rolls on for the Trojans? They got back at it this week. Where do you see them stacking up in this loaded Pac-12 for 2023?
Well, you know, USC is going to be in the mix, but you can't really put USC clearly at the top as long as Alex Grinch is still coordinating this defense and has not really proven himself as a top tier coordinator. Now, let's get one thing clear about Alex Grinch. Like, you can't call him an especially good coordinator, but you also can't call him a terrible coordinator, because here's the thing. Lincoln Riley has asked Alex Grinch to field and inherit some really bad defenses. This was true the first time around at Oklahoma 4 years ago, when Alex Grinch had to basically clean up the mess that Mike Stoops left behind. You know, Oklahoma gives up a billion points to Texas in the Red River rivalry, and Lincoln Riley says, Alex Grinch, fix this mess. So, like, Alex Grinch, there's really only one season you can point to where Alex Grinch was viewed to have had elite talent, you know, a fully stacked cupboard, and that was 2021. That was when Oklahoma entered the preseason rankings number two. And that was the year Oklahoma was supposed to be in the national title game, was supposed to finally win a playoff semifinal under Lincoln Riley. And Alex Grinch, you know, didn't do the job. But, like, that's the only time he's entered a season with, you know, the whole college football community thinking, all right, now he finally has the dudes. And now he has really some groceries and he can really cook. So he didn't do the job, but that's a small sample size. That's one season. Usually, Alex Grinch is asked by Lincoln Riley to make a dumpster fire 200 degrees cooler. You know, to reduce it from 400 degrees to 200 degrees. But it's still a fire. You know, it's still hot. It's still a burning mess. And so in that regard, like, we don't know how good Alex Grinch really is. It's because he's asked to do these reclamation projects. He's told, all right, take something horrible and make it just below average or average, because that would have made the grade for USC last season. You know, don't give up 40, all right? Just don't let Dalton Kincaid get 700 passing yards. Let's just limit him to 100 passing yards. But, you know, couldn't do it, all right? So, like, but that's Alex Grinch's career. It's just make things less awful, make things less terrible. Grinch has only had that 1 year at Oklahoma 2 years ago, 2021, in which he's had what many believed was a really good defense, not just, you know, a less than terrible defense. So in that regard, it's hard to really pin down just how good Alex Grinch really is. But of course, doesn't that get back to Lincoln Riley? Like, is Lincoln Riley willing to accept mediocrity on the defensive side of the ball his whole career, or does he actually have some standards? So far, like, he's happy accepting mediocrity. And so we're going to find out in 2023 just how much tolerance Lincoln Riley has for mediocrity on defense. Now, the word out of spring practice so far at USC has been, well, guys are getting stronger in the weight room. You know, they're really building things up in the offseason. Like, they realized from Utah in particular just how much stronger they really need to be legitimate. But, you know, who's convinced, right? Because if you don't have the elite players, if you don't have the actual studs, you can do all the weight training in the world and you're still going to miss tackles when it really counts. So no one's really convinced. And, of course, you guys, you've studied the Pac-12 schedule. You know that USC has a backloaded schedule. The first several weeks really aren't going to give us an indication of where USC stands. It all begins with Notre Dame and the trip to South Bend on October 14th, and then that Utah game the week later, and then it's off to the races. Oregon, Washington, UCLA in November. That's when we'll find out what this defense is truly made of. And so until we get into October, like, USC could be 5-0, big whoop. Okay, you beat Arizona State, you beat Colorado, you beat San Jose State, you beat Nevada. You know, no one's going to hold a parade for that. It's when you get into the teeth of the schedule, Notre Dame, Utah, Oregon, Washington, and then we'll find out if these Trojans are soft or if they've actually developed some toughness.
One thing we've been looking at, of course, is how good the quarterback play in the Pac-12 could really be this year. It's insane, too. I'm looking at the Heisman Trophy odds, and Caleb Williams leads those, but not by a ton, because three out of the top five Heisman Trophy odds go to quarterbacks in the Pac-12. Caleb Williams, Michael Penix Jr., and Bo Nix, all in the top five for odds as possible Heisman Trophy guys, or at least the guys with the best odds right now. And, of course, that always changes quite a bit. It seems like it's really hard, obviously, to repeat as a Heisman Trophy winner as well. Does Michael Penix Jr. have a better shot of winning the Heisman this year because Caleb Williams already won it, and Penix Jr. is an insane talent there up at UW?
I totally agree. You know, as you know, Archie Griffin of Ohio State in 74-75 was the only two-time winner. And, you know, that year, if you ask college football historians, they would tell you Chuck Muncy of Cal actually had a better season, probably should have been the Heisman winner that year. So Heisman voters today, like, they are very reluctant to give the award to the same guy 2 years straight. In order for Caleb Williams to win the award, he's going to have to blow everybody out of the water, and USC is going to have to make the playoff. So, like, I'm going to make that call right now. If USC doesn't make the playoff, Caleb Williams can put up a billion passing yards and 5 million rushing yards. He's not going to win it unless USC has the team results to match. So if USC doesn't make the playoff and Washington has a really good 10 or 11 win season, and it's all things being equal, and it comes down to those two, Penix would definitely get the nod, precisely because, like, you don't want to give a guy the Heisman twice unless he just leaves absolutely no alternative. So I'm going to go on record with that. And I do think that, you know, for Caleb Williams, like, all right, he has the Heisman. I don't think he cares one bit about winning a second one. he wants to make the playoff. Like he that's what he and his college career deserve. And for USC fans, like the main focus this season is, let's not waste Caleb Williams' talent with a terrible defense. Let's make sure we have a team accomplishment that rewards Caleb Williams' career. I mean, like, if you're a USC fan, like, if would you rather have a Pac-12 title, a college football playoff berth, or a Caleb back-to-back Heisman? Like, the Caleb back-to-back Heisman is clearly number three, if not number eight or number 14. Like, it's all about the team achievements this year. And so there's going to be the hype and the fanfare about the double Heisman, but really that is not at the top of the priority list for USC.
Is there belief, though, that Caleb will be better this year? I mean, we're seeing that he's doing Hugo Boss fashion shows. Hey, I mean, is he dialed in to even improve on the field? Because he's got to be better if USC is going to get to that playoff.
You know, I mean, like, how much better does he need to be? Yeah. Because he barely turned the ball over last season.
True.
And USC did put up a ton of points. Now, like, there were moments when Caleb Williams would be a little impatient. He would force a throw down the field. But, like, you know, he was injured in the Pac-12 championship game. Like, if he's healthy, I mean, I don't see, you know, Caleb Williams having any kind of drop-off from last year. And if you don't have any kind of drop-off from last year, the only two questions are, one, you know, can the defense, you know, not give up 40? You know, we'll see if Alex Grinch can clear that low bar, and no one's convinced that he will. And the other thing is, as you guys know, when you looked at the Pac-12 championship game, the other thing that really hurt USC, and you know, it might not have gotten as much conversation nationally precisely because Caleb Williams got hurt in that game, but it went under the radar a little bit that Andrew Voorhees, the elite offensive lineman, he was not there, and that was big because you saw his backup, Mason Murphy, get absolutely roasted by Utah. And, of course, Utah had backups in there because Fillinger was out,
yep,
and a couple other guys were out. So, like, Utah's backups roasted USC's backups up front. That showed the depth that Kyle Whittingham has built into the program, the toughness that he's injected into the program. And so, really, it's not really about Caleb Williams. I mean, you expect him to be really darn good. It's about the teammates around him, mostly on the defense, but also if there's an injury to one of the starters on the offensive line, as was the case with Voorhees, can USC's backups, as you go down the depth chart, will there not be as much of a drop-off? Because the drop-off from Voorhees to Mason Murphy last December in Vegas in the Pac-12 title game, that was a steep drop-off. Utah took advantage of it. Caleb and the USC offense didn't look nearly as good as a result. So really, I understand it. Like, it's perfectly reasonable to say Caleb Williams has to be better. And, like, that's a fine, reasonable point, but it's not really at the very top of my pyramid of priorities. It's about the surrounding pieces and the surrounding context. That will accentuate all of his strengths and make sure that the whole project for USC comes together this year.
Matt Zemek, Trojans Wire, is where you can find his byline, and he does a great job covering the USC Trojans. And, of course, with the final spring that we're able to kind of get a download on these Trojans, we're looking forward to chatting with you for the final camp, walking up to some of the final matchups with these teams as they're facing off against USC. Boy, you talk about a target on the back of the Trojans this year. It's going to be insane how much everybody wants to get these guys before they leave. So, Matt, thanks for hanging out with us, man. Enjoy your weekend.
Thanks, Matt.
Always fun to be with you. Thanks for having me again.
There you go. I always love having him on. There you go. Matt Zemek, Trojans Wire. I mean, look, he's right. I mean, it's like, what else do you want out of Caleb Williams? You get 40-plus points out of him, and then your defense, you know.
Their defense is going to let him down, though.
Yeah,
so that's why he's got to be better, in my opinion. I mean, but
why the loyalty from Lincoln Riley to Alex Grinch, though, for real? It's just like, dude, everybody has to make that decision at some point to go, I told you I was going to give you a job, but you got to perform here, man. And I'm trying to make a national powerhouse out of this team. And we could be if we would have had a decent defense. And USC has no excuse not to get the talent that they do and not to put together a great defense. So interesting stuff. It's wild to think that, you know, this Trojans team is they're going into the Big Ten. That is insane to think about. It's just wild. So appreciate Matt Zemek joining us. Jeremiah Jensen, nice enough to jump on the horn here with us. I said, JJ, be ready. As soon as it goes half, we're going to go to South Carolina here, which is where he is live for the Utah Utes. The women's team, of course, leading at the half over LSU. How's it been so far, JJ?
Well, it's been great for the Utes. Hopefully you guys can hear me okay. I'm here in the bowels of Ben Secor's Arena here in Greenville. But great half for the Utes, to be honest with you. I think if before the game, if you told Coach Roberts that they would have a 33-29 lead and Alyssa Peely sat out most of the half with foul trouble, I think she'd take it in a heartbeat. So it's been a great half for the Utes, and they're in great position to advance to the Elite Eight.
We were just looking at this game, too, and Mitch and I were both commenting about how frenetic the pace is. The Utes forced a lot of turnovers, and some of them were unforced, but LSU does not seem like they're they seem a little bit out of sorts here, and the Utes are causing that.
Well, absolutely. I think that's kind of the game that Utah wanted. They wanted to get the pace up. LSU's athleticism and length is their advantage, and if Utah was able to kind of, you know, make it a full-court game instead of a half-court game, I think that was going to help them. And even in the half-court, Utah's done pretty well. They've knocked down some threes, which I think was huge for them. They have not shot the three-point shot very well the last few games, going back to that big win over Stanford. But tonight, John Anipkins, Kennedy McQueen are both 2 of 4 from three. The guards especially have been great. Izzy Palmer as well. You combine those guards' points, and they got 20 of the 33 points. So with Alyssa Peely having foul trouble and having some issues inside with their length, for the Utes to be able to shoot that well and kind of speed the game up a little bit and equalize that length and athleticism for LSU has been key for them.
JJ, you got to assume that LSU is going to make a run in this second half. What do you think Utah's got to do in the second half to hold off the Tigers and come up with this victory?
Keep defending as intensely as they are. They've got to get on the boards. That's where LSU can start punishing them. Angel Reese, who is their star player, who's averaging 30 points and 20 rebounds in the tournament coming into this game, only has 5 points and 4 rebounds in the first half. She had 2 fouls. She had to sit most of the half. So you're going to see a lot more Angel Reese in the second half. They're big, long forward. And they've got to keep her from becoming such a huge factor in the game, which she hasn't been in this one. So as long as they're able to do that, as long as they're able to keep hitting three-point shots and spreading the floor, Utah's in a great position. But, yeah, LSU's going to make a run here. They've got too much talent, too much length and athleticism not to. They're well coached, as everybody knows. Kim Mulkey's a Hall of Fame-level coach. So they'll make a run, but Utah's in a great position.
Kim Mulkey wearing the Hall of Fame-level jacket on the sidelines, too. I mean, it's just tremendous.
I think he's just going to fly away at the end of the game.
Depending on the results, you might need to.
He's just going to fly back to Baton Rouge.
Jeremiah Jensen from Greenville, South Carolina, where the Utes are leading the LSU Tigers at the half. 33-29. JJ, we'll chat with you again, man. Thanks for the update. You can get all the coverage on television, of course, tonight. Michelle Bodkin covering everything on the digital side of things. So I appreciate you guys' coverage. So hang in there, JJ. We'll talk to you again.
You got it.
All right, there you go.
Sounding good in those bowels of the building.
Hey, your bowels sound great.
Sound good. That is a tricky thing, getting a clear signal.
I did see a tweet from Scott Gerard. Our own Scotty G here about the actual tweet was never a dull moment in Logan. That was from just about 45 minutes ago. Is this in reference to the possibility of Ryan Odom maybe not sticking around in Logan long term? Had a great year.
You have to wonder. I mean, it's when you're getting an East Coast guy, you wonder if Utah State would make any changes. Their athletic director, the previous one, he made a kind of a push to go with unconventional hires, East Coast guys that didn't have ties, but then they have any sort of success, they bounce.
Do you wonder what sport is the coaching changes just like drop of the hat coaching changes that are based off of just like very quick success or even just like, we got to get a coach in here right now. You think about like St. John's fired their coach and they're all, we heard Rick Pitino is available. We're going to fire this guy. Say that we are firing with cause and we're getting Rick Pitino in here. Or a guy has, for example, FDU's coach, right? He got picked up immediately,
Tobin, and
he gets picked up immediately to go be the head coach elsewhere, right? And so
Iona.
at Iona, Rick Pitino's old place. And then you have, you know, Ryan Odom, who had a tremendous year. So there might be some news attached to that at some point. We'll keep you up to date on that. So much going on Friday, right? I've heard South Florida was one of those teams that's been thrown out there. A lot of other places. You got open options, especially, like you said, if you already know they're not going to be there long term. Okay. So much to go around the corner. It is a Friday, which means we're just jamming everything in there and absolutely getting as much out of it as we can here. So let's jump out to a break. We'll come back. More to discuss here. Mitch Harper joining in place of Scott Mitchell today, who's out. And we will keep you abreast of this running Utes score against the LSU Tigers. So they're up at the half, 33-29, as they are just about to inbound for the second half to start up. We'll keep you updated on that as well. And I'll update you on how much I'm beating everybody by in the NCAA tournament brackets here at the office. Stay with us, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Attention. This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery.
Attention.
With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
Presented by G2G Bars. This is 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Welcome back. It's Unrivaled, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Lady Utes, LSU Tigers, facing off in the Sweet 16. It is locked up at 37 right here. Battle between underneath there with Alyssa Peely and Reese. What's her first name?
Angel.
Angel Reese.
Yep.
What do they call her? The Bayou Barbie?
That's correct.
You know what? That's a fantastic nickname. That's about as good as it gets.
That is good.
I could go for some Bayou barbecue. I said that and it just made me hungry.
My mouth started watering.
Did you ever do the thing where you go down and you're covering a game maybe down in Louisiana and you eat some alligator? Did you get convinced of that?
They did have it at the media the welcome dinner
at Shreveport,
and I was not giving in.
Mitch is kind of a guy. Mitch is more of a chicken nuggets guy.
Yeah. I need to sometimes expand my palate.
I'm disappointed. Try things. I'm disappointed because for all the traveling you do, you're like, oh, I'll take a Big Mac. Come on. Quit it.
It's like a gas station thing, a Bahama Mama to go. Just get it on the go.
My kids are like, hey, Dad, let's get some sushi. I'm like, hey, Maverick? You know what? Let's put it on hold. Let's put it on hold for a minute. Not that I don't trust Maverick, but I just... We're landlocked, man. I don't trust fish around here. Right. Like, anytime somebody goes, oh, fresh seafood, I'm like, we're in Salt Lake, bro. And they're like, yeah, we flew it in today. So that plane was on that fish was on a plane today? I don't know if I'm buying that. All right. Mitch, I wanted to ask you a couple things about the rumors and the insanity on Twitter. Is, I mean, Twitter's already a... If you want to go down a hole of just, like, negativity, you hit... The stories that are negative to the stories that are positive has got to be 5-1, you know? You don't feel good on Twitter, typically. You don't walk away from Twitter and go, man, that made me feel good. And if you're talking about the Pac-12 and the Big 12 in that space, you just don't – there's zero there that is worth diving into from people who say they know, are the most knowledgeable about this stuff. It just is so hard to watch. And so I was looking at this all that we've heard about is the Pac-12, quote-unquote, sticking together, right? And I read this article today, and I thought, you know, this Dan Wetzel article on Yahoo about the Pac-12 sticking together. We've heard that. Actually, from the very beginning, that's at least been the most consistent messages. These presidents have all gotten together. These athletic directors have all got together and said, when you're asked about it, you say, we are committed, this group of 10, together. But that could change at any moment. And I don't know what the future is going to hold in that sense, but I do wonder when you say, hey, we are 10 and we are strong, how that works and how they could get affected one way or the other by the things that are going on in other conferences. Like, it just doesn't, to me, I go, I'm not that, I don't care what happens in these other conferences. And you've heard that. They're going to stick together. How much do you believe it, though?
I believe it. I think that they do stay together. And I do think that the Pac-10 comes up with a media rights deal. And And I think it's just a short-term deal, though. And I think just long-term, there's always going to be uncertainty with this conference. That's just kind of my forecast of the situation with this. I just feel like this is going to be a shaky ground league. And, I mean, honestly, everyone except for the SEC and Big Ten is going to be on shaky ground. Even the Big 12, I mean, we could be talking 10 years from now where, you know, the SEC and Big Ten are talking about they want to create their own division or whatever. I mean, that's extreme line of thought, but it's how ESPN and Fox are pumping in money to those leagues. They are going to hype up those conferences like never before, and the perceptions and the narratives of those conferences is just going to continue to grow, while as the Big 12 and Pac 12 are going to continue to kind of take a back seat in some way. I mean, a big way. So I think that, you know, but I just think what hurts the Pac 12 the most is that they just don't have the followings and the fan bases like the Big 12. And I think that also, too, that, you know, the Big 12 conference, they have athletic departments and academic administrators that are wired to have athletics succeed, whereas that's always a question with the Pac 12 is how much pressure is at the doorstep of George Klyavkov. I mean, I think for the college sports fan, they'd say he should be probably getting fired because he hasn't delivered a media rights deal. But does that line of thought match up with school presidents? I don't get that vibe from these Pac-12 presidents that have actually gone on the record, and it's been quiet out at Stanford and Cal. Who knows? Maybe their fan bases aren't even realizing there's an issue with media rights for the Pac-12 as far as I know.
Stanford's like, have you seen our endowment? We do not care.
But I just think that, you know, you're right, though, when it comes to this storyline, that it's really become just – it's almost like politics where it's divided. It's 50-50 split. You're getting some agenda from one angle and then you're getting another bit. Ultimately, it's just got to come down to we need to see a media rights deal. And I just think the longer this continues on, they can say it's difficult to come up with a deal. Yeah, we knew that all along. When you weren't going to get an extension with the current existing media partners, it was, and you went to the open market, that was going to take a long period of time, but it shouldn't be this long. I mean, I can't imagine you go into a situation where you're less than 10 months away from the new deal going down or starting and you're striking it up. I mean, maybe it's just a new order, but I'm just very fascinated to see what that looks like, because the moment that deal comes through, then what is the alignment there for these schools to stick with the pack? Because you know your mark and the Big 12 are poking at all costs. I mean, well, they continue to poke.
That was actually brought up in this article too, because Robert Robbins, all-time name, by the way, for a university president. Good to meet you, Robert. Robert Robbins. Doctor. So he says, yeah, Brett's a heck of a salesman. And the media is buying whatever they're selling. And I thought, when you have to go, when you're saying that, like, oh, yeah, he's a great salesman, and he's saying it with like, as if it's a negative thing.
Yeah.
The reality is, and you go, oh, and the media is buying whatever they're selling. So you've maligned two groups here. Brett Yormark and the Big 12 for, you know, coming in and maybe selling you a bill of goods or telling you how good they are. And then the media for buying whatever they're selling or just whatever they're putting up with. And you say, listen, we're in a – just like all businesses, perception is reality here, dude. Like – the way that this comes across and the way that the president's meeting together this week, when John Wilner put that, what was it, a tweet last Friday at this very time, basically, and he goes, if you are a Pac-12 fan, you better keep your ear to the ground Tuesday. This Tuesday, watch out. Here it comes, because the presidents are all meeting and the CEOs of the Pac-12 are all meeting and something's going to happen. And then he and John Canzano tweet out, productive meeting by these guys. They'll meet again in April. That was this week's meeting. It was productive. I'm like, look, what this comes across as is that actually nothing has been done yet.
Yeah.
And whether or not it has, I mean, you hear people say, yeah, very soon. Mark Harlan came on our show, said, yeah, I think you'll see something very soon. Now, what does that mean? Now, there's no real timeline. No one's going, dude, if you don't get a deal done by June 1, then your program gets canceled. Like that's not what we're talking about. I just wonder if maybe we're going off. And again, the timing narrative is a tough one, but it's also kind of a reality. Let's get it done. People want to have this thing happen. I just want this deal to be done so we can actually talk about the things that matter inside of these programs.
And I think what we've learned in this process, too, is that the PAC's number one path towards securing a media rights deal was honestly to lure UCLA back. I think they legitimately thought that UCLA could come back, and that was delayed this move to where it's dragged out this long. It probably could have been done had they not been waiting on the state of California, the UC system to decide on UCLA going to the Big Ten. But I think that was kind of their number one path, and that was concerning too. And I just think that, you know, the Pac-12 network has just been a colossal failure. And I think there's got to be a little bit of worry for these linear networks to invest, and even the streaming platforms to invest heavily into the Pac-12 when they had a network that there was no push. There was no, hey, call your satellite cable provider to get it. I mean, we remember the days in the Mountain West and also the SEC. When the SEC wasn't going to be on DirecTV, there was significant blowback.
Yeah.
And they had to cave and bend the knee to get the SEC network. That just never was the case. The Pac-12 network was just an utter failure. And it was a great vision by Larry Scott, but it just execution was poor. And it's caused them to be in this spot. And then you add up the on-field performances. And that's the thing, too, is that this is not some 12-anon stuff
right.
that always gets spilled. I mean, the Big 12 is not on just some amazing footing that's so much better than the Pac-12, but they've had results on the field that are helping them, and they have this commitment in their communities and their fan bases to college sports, whereas these markets in the Pac-12 just do not support college athletics at the same level and intensity like these Big 12 programs in their markets. I know they're small, but they just are passionate for college athletics, and that is critical in this era of eyeballs and actually consuming the content and generating interest. That's where this thing is going, and I think that's what gives the Big 12 a leg up. And then you have a commissioner who's got those relationships with TV executives, and he comes in and makes deals happen. That's put them in an upper hand.
I just, you know, I hate the idea of, like, I mean, well, the thing with Brett Yormark and the Big 12, I mean, you make a good point where it's like, I mean, they're not, it's not like they barely finished third behind the Big 10 or the SEC when it comes to negotiating. Like, everybody, I mean, you heard the Pac-12, a lot of folks, Mark Harlan, one of them, when he came on our show and said, yeah, we want to get that bronze medal. Which sounds weird, right?
It to is go, weird.
I can't wait to get that bronze medal. But you know what's funny? The Big 12 thinks the same thing.
Yep.
They wanted to feed each other in this how much money you're getting. And like you said, it's not like the Big 12 is in a great spot, but they're at least telling people that they are in a great spot.
They're going to go down swinging.
And it feels like they're in a good spot. Like, it's the perception is reality part. So I just am. I'm interested to see how this thing shakes out, what the timing actually turns out to, and maybe the Pac-12 presidents and CEOs, the groups all get together and they go, you know what? Middle finger to the media. We don't care. We'll roll it out when we want, man. I mean, that's kind of how you feel.
You kind of wonder too if the Big Ten and SEC just look at this and just laugh,
and they go,
they're just like, what are they doing out there? Like,
cute.
Just bickering over 31 million, like. I remember first 31 million. That was cute.
What was so? Is that what the final number was for the Big 12? I've heard so many.
It's reported 31.5 for media rights, kicking in 26 academic year.
Okay, all right.
Which is it's more than the 25 they're getting per year right now.
Yeah.
With Texas and Oklahoma in the league, and then you pair it up with that $100 million that they're going to get with the exit fees. And I mean, if you're Brett Yormark, you got to use that as some sort of incentive for these Pac-12 teams. Like, hey, Arizona. I mean, I would. If I was one of these, I know that would probably be tough to swallow because I'm sure the Baylors of the world want a nice big chunk of that. But sweeten the pot. Make it some sort of inducement, as we heard that word all the time in NIL. So we'll give you a big cut of this to come over and give you a leg up financially.
They could throw $10 million to an institution when they roll up. You get two new schools coming in, and you go, hey, here's $10 million a piece.
I just don't want the Big 12 to do this basketball-only moves. Don't do that. Don't do the Gonzaga, the St. John's, Xavier.
Oh, my. Have those been thrown out there?
I mean, well, because Yormark's a New York guy, and
right.
people have come up with these theories.
They're going to Rucker Park now.
It's like, no. If you don't have football and you're not in the Power 5, there's no need to expand beyond what you currently got.
Oh,
I mean,
man.
You got ESPN, Greg McElroy saying, go get East Carolina, go get, like, no. Just if you can't get Arizona and you can't get Colorado, I don't think we're pretty safe to say they're not going to get Utah unless it's a doomsday scenario where Utah's hand is forced. That's the only moves you make if you're Brett Yormark, because anything else, I can't imagine it's adding much unless he has some innovative way to generate more money for basketball that no one else is doing. Then, you know, Yormark's going to be a real innovator, and who knows how long he'll actually be in the Big 12. He'll be off to something greater like the NBA commissioner or something down the road.
All right. We got a lot to get to. We have our Weekend Warriors around the corner. And also when we come back, not Weekend Warriors. We have our Sucks to Be You. We're going to do the Weekend Warriors. These are the people who it sucks to be currently. Could be in the world of sports, could be outside the world of sports. We'll determine it. People who you can feel better about your life because it's tough being them right now. That and much more. You don't want to miss it. Man, ReMedical, Utah's only physician-owned operated wellness clinic, offering ED treatments that are discreet, non-invasive, and customized to your needs. ReMedical, renew, restore, reclaim. Visit ReMedical.com today. The Lady Utes leading the LSU Tigers by a point at the end of the third quarter, 47-46. It is ramping up for quite a finish here. So we'll see how it goes. We'll see if the Utes can get in that round of eight, that Elite Eight in the women's bracket. More to go. Stay with us, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Make yourself feel a little bit better by basking in the misfortune of others. Unrivaled presents Sucks to Be You on the Zone Sports Network.
Welcome back. It's Unrivaled, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Start of the fourth quarter here. LSU up 50-47 over the Utes right now.
Good game.
It is turning out to be quite the matchup here. And the Utes need a little bit of confidence here, some inspiration. Because they've basically been leading this entire time. It's been back and forth. I remember there's been seven lead changes. But we'll keep you updated. I want those Lady Utes in the Elite Eight just like you do. Let's go.
Men's game tips off, too. San Diego State, Bama, 11-11. 10 minutes left in the first, so the Aztecs.
I have all four of my picks for today are, I mean, not to do a quick lap around everybody, but I'm still leading the KSL Sports group in our bracket challenge. And Mitch Harper moved into second place today.
I did.
That's actually why Scott's not on the show today. Because he was leading with me, and then as soon as you fall out of that position, I just take whoever's in second. Boom. So Mitch is right there. Mitch is just right on the cusp of being on that. And again, today, and I actually have Alabama winning, I have Houston winning, I have Creighton winning, and I have Texas winning.
Ooh, this is a make-or-break day for you. You clean these up.
Because putting Creighton in the Elite Eight was a weird thing for me. I remember thinking, I don't know about that. They're in that bracket with Arizona. But they're playing Princeton today. I just don't believe that the 15 seed's going to go to the Elite Eight this year. Call me crazy.
You get to weekend two, and it's a primetime stage. It's a different environment.
They've been studying you all week now.
Yeah, it's a different vibe, and it's a different feeling than that round.
I just can't have – the thing that I really can't have is Xavier upsetting my Texas Longhorns because that's my natty. That's my national champion.
See, and okay? I thought I was original. I thought, I'm going to go against the grain and
pick
the Longhorns. I think six people in our KSL sports staff picked it. PK did. Jake Scott did. So many people picked the Longhorns. I thought, man, I'm going to be creative. Go with UT. Texas.
We'll see. That Gonzaga-UCLA game by the night, that was an all-timer. That was really fun to watch.
That was a good one.
When UCLA hadn't scored a field goal in 11 minutes, and they still were in that thing at the very end, man, I was excited about that. So, we're going to be covering. You're going to be hearing Westwood One coverage of the NCAA tournament on our air all weekend long. All those games are going to be coming to you. And on top of it, I wanted to mention also, if you're looking for the Real Salt Lake game this weekend. It's going to be over on KSL 1160. So the blowtorch signal that is KSL 1160 AM tomorrow for the Real Salt Lake match against St. Louis, who I think is coming into town. It's going to be a good one, but it's going to be over there on KSL 1160 AM. So that's just a little announcement for you. Let me see here, Mitch. Who does it suck to be? I'll start off.
Speaking of the Crimson Tide.
Nate Oates. He's the head coach of the basketball Crimson Tide. When the football coach of the Crimson Tide I can't. Am I saying this name right? Nick Saban.
Saban.
When
it's
Nick,
a long drawn
listen,
out A.
When Nick Saban rolls up and has a criticism for you, you better watch out.
Yeah.
This isn't like sometimes the basketball coach and the football coach, because remember when, was it Calipari who was like,
yes.
Hey, this is a basketball school, son, you know? And then the basketball coach and the football coach are at odds. This is not a football coach, basketball coach at odds thing. When Nick Saban speaks, Nate Oates, you better listen. Nate Oates getting the criticism from Nick Saban, who has had to say, yeah, I don't like one bit how they've handled this thing with Brandon Miller at Alabama, who apparently was not just provided the weapon that was part of an alleged murder, but also may have been present during that. And on top of all that, you have Alabama has a defensive back freshman who is going to get pulled over and has weed in the car, decides to go 140 miles an hour on a chase. And Nick Saban goes, dude, you're gonzo. You are gone. And instead you have – and then Nick Saban goes, look, there's no such thing as wrong place, wrong time. This isn't some, like, cast it aside coincidental thing like, oh, whoops. That, in this case, is not. So I love – Nate Oates under fire from Nick Saban himself at the school. Those are awkward athletic department meetings going forward now.
And that's the one football coach that could get a basketball coach at the same school, like, on the hot seat. I mean, really – it just feels 1,000%. Like Saban's that type of presence where if he disagrees with someone, that puts a basketball coach on the hot seat, I would imagine. We'll
1,000%. And you know, I don't think he's going to go as far as be like, get him out of here.
Yeah.
You know? Because honestly, Nick Saban also just goes, I just don't even think about the basketball team.
Yeah.
How much does Nick Saban think about the basketball team? He doesn't.
It's just a filler to spring football down in the SEC. That's all basketball is.
They are one of the favorites for the national championship, and no one gives two cruds compared to football.
They want
to
know day six spring ball depth chart on the O-line.
Yes.
They'd rather know that down there in the deep south. I mean, hey, more power to them. They win everything. My sucks to be you. You know, we were talking about the Pac-12. I'm not going to go with that. But, you know, Pac-12 media rights have been talking about maybe
yes.
Amazon. Football on Amazon is my sucks to be you. Last year in the NFL, those Thursday night games, they were brutal, Alex. And NFL owners, they're so bad that the owners are voting to have these games flexed. So we could be seeing scenarios where teams are playing kind of impromptu Thursday games. They're so bad to create these good matchups, or they're flexed off of Amazon completely.
Is that an option? I mean, with the deal they signed up on? Because Amazon paid them all that money.
The owners are not happy with this. It's just, again, the streaming stuff, the matchups were terrible.
It's
the broadcast
real,
is great.
No, that's the thing.
It's amazing.
It's a freaking bummer because Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit, I love that duo. I've loved that. I don't like the studio guys or the sideline, you know, it's not the sideline person, but it's the sideline, like what after the game and they have all these guys breaking it down.
Yeah. I think Joe Thomas.
Yeah. Is Tony Gonzalez part of that? Either way, I don't like it very much, yeah. But I do love that in booth crew, and it'd be a bummer, but yeah.
But flexing them out though, I mean, just again, it's a tough spot on Thursday night. One can go turn around, but then the matchups were terrible, and owners want to flex these games out potentially.
Sucks to be Scott's bracket. He scored 0 points yesterday, and he's now in seventh place. Suddenly goes from tied for first yesterday to seventh, which is where I could find myself if my teams don't figure it out tonight. So also, just as a mention, it sucked 22 years ago to be that ill-fated pigeon that flew in front of a Randy Johnson fastball in maybe one of the most insane yes. sports videos I've ever freaking seen in my life. When that bird was exploded at 99 miles an hour.
And you bringing that up, I instantly know what you're talking about.
Like, you have to go watch the video.
Every sports fan of a certain age knows that clip.
You have
And you've watched it a million times.
I'll just tell you what happened. So I was on my mission, right, when this happened. Okay? I'm in Argentina, so I'm not. So it's great because I go on my mission. Ichiro's the rookie of the year and the MVP. The Mariners won 116 games. I'm gone. And then Randy Johnson hits a bird with a freaking fastball.
Big
unit.
I was like
this. I want one thing. I want two things. I want to have a, I want to get a burger from Five Guys. And give me the video of Randy Johnson hitting that pigeon that I've heard about. Those are the things I have to see. Boot them up for me.
Can we get back to baseball with 6'9" pitchers?
Yes.
That era was awesome.
My wife goes, he kind of looks like the bird that he hit with that, with all the feathers off.
Like that D-backs rotation, yes. Randy Johnson, Curt Schilling.
Wow.
I mean, I could name the 2001 D-backs way better than probably five players today in the Major League Baseball.
My goodness. Okay, we'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to hear that Joe Ingles sound and the conversation that he had with the media walking you up to this game versus the Milwaukee Bucks who are in town. It's so good to see Joe Ingles back and how much he loves talking. If you're one of those people who goes, I love when people talk just how much they love Salt Lake, how much they love Utah, you're going to want to stay tuned to old Joe Ingles. So stay with us, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love.
We're not going anywhere. We ride here.
With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keurig. Presented by G2G Bars. On 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
So. Welcome back, everybody. It is Unrivaled, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keery, Mitch Harper joining me here. Last hour of the show today because we're walking you up to pregame for the Jazz v. Bucks tonight at Vivint Smart Home Arena. And because of how things went with this Trailblazers game on Wednesday, I assume that the Jazz are going to win tonight. I'm not going to mark it down. I'm not going to put my watch by it. In fact, you can't put your watch by anything the Jazz have done this year. So excited to see what's going to happen tonight. Joe Ingles is, of course, back in town, and that's an exciting thing. Let's kick off the show, though, in the hour with the cut. As always, let's do it.
The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled, top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Ain't nothing like it.
All right, the cut and our program brought to you by G2G Bars. All natural ingredients, no preservative. G2G Bar tastes fantastic, and it's packed full of protein. That's what you want in a protein bar. The part where it doesn't, you just kind of put up with a protein bar, that's not what you want. Come on. Get the G2G Bar. Mitch did before the show.
It did.
I've eaten one. It's hard to limit it to one, though. And you can get in trouble that way.
They're tasty.
They're too good. All right. And also Trajan Wealth, local trusted financial fiduciaries, 801-899-7600. That's 801-899-7600 or Trajan Wealth, TRAJANwealth.com. 4 minutes 30 left in this Utes contest against LSU. LSU's on a 7-0 run right now. Utes are down 57-52 with 4:20 left in the fourth quarter here. So we'll see if they can rally from five down and figure this thing out. They've been leading for a lot of this game. And just in the second half, LSU's kind of figured some things out. And, this has been a frenetic game. It's been awesome. Lots of turnovers.
Tough spot for Utah, honestly. I mean, you get the 2-seed a reward. But then you're in a bracket with a 3-seed who only lost 2 games out of the SEC. Like, that just, I've never seen
30
that.
30-2 LSU
out
gets
of the
a 3-seed.
I don't understand that. I've never heard that. Wild. It's just kind of odd, honestly.
Yeah.
But you got to make the most of your situation. They're right there. I mean, they just got to make the necessary plays, and it's been a tough game for the Stars and Alyssa Peely and Angel Reese, just both teams, you know, monstering both of those Stars, double-teaming them and making life difficult. So they got to have some kind of unlikely star emerge on that March Madness stage to pull this one out and come up with the win.
You know, I was just thinking of our plight, you and I, as dads of young kids. Because you just had a little FaceTime phone call with your kids during the break.
We did.
And they are playing, and this is a real thing, Power Wash Simulator. Is that on the Switch?
PS5.
Oh, wow!
Yes.
So it's even more, the graphics are even more dialed up.
60 frames per second, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, and then my kids have Farming Simulator. And they also have this hunting one that they do. It's like Real Hunter 1 or something. And I'm like, imagine the wildness of, like, if you were to flash back to the past and you go, hey, little Mitch, it's Big Mitch from the future. What are some of the popular games on the consoles? Well, you've hit PS5. No way! That's awesome. What are you playing? Power Wash Simulator. Like, we have basically... I think it's a good ploy, because if they do that... I actually had a job power washing. That's a big deal up in the Northwest.
Is it?
Yep. Yes, because you have moss covering a lot of crap, right? And so... I worked at a place that's what I did. I power washed sidewalks. They get gunky and they get nasty. And buildings all across the Seattle, you know, area. And I remember thinking, I hate this job. But there was something satisfying about making it, you know, clean. And that has now been translated into a video freaking game.
And the satisfying part of it is I think from TikTok. I mean, have you never watched a 5-minute TikTok of
power washing? Yes.
Rug that's been filthy, you're going, why not just throw that away and get an $80 rug to replace it? But no, we're going to go through this time-lapse video to see this rug get clean with a power wash. And then somebody goes,
let's make a video game out of that. Some guy writing code. What's the nozzle look like on this? Oh, it's dialed up. The graphics are sweet. Man, my heavens, that's where we've gotten. But again, my kids are like, I got to get a new guy to muck the stalls on my farm simulator, because this guy's not working out.
There's Goat Simulator, too.
I know. It's ridiculous. Tractor Simulator. It's all made in Germany, by the way. Germans love simulating very mundane crap. And we're here to buy it. I'm like, hey, son, why don't you actually go out and power wash something? They'd go, no way. Yeah. No freaking way. Okay. Let's kick things off here with Joe Ingles, who's back in town. Man, we miss Joe. But it's been fun to see the personalities that have kind of floated to the top with this new Jazz roster. But Joe Ingles coming into town with his new team, the Milwaukee Bucks. How cool would it be if the Bucks actually win a title, to have Joe get a ring? That'd be really fun. Jay Crowder's on that team now too. And but here's what he sat down with the media. Of course, everybody wanted to ask how he's doing. Everybody wanted to ask about, you know, his time here in Utah or being back. All of it. And here's what he had to say. Here's a little bit of that session.
It was too cold.
Did you miss that Utah snow?
It's a cold. Well, I think we get more of it in Milwaukee at the moment. So it was nice yesterday.
Yeah.
Until we woke up this morning and back to how I'm how it normally was. So.
So does this count as your official homecoming? Does that Portland thing last year, that doesn't count? You didn't even play. Right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if I was here or not for half the game. I came for a little bit, but I think I was on crutches still. Like, I was right. It was right after surgery and all that, so it was pretty early on. So I think I got back there at some point and got some treatment from them before they left, and it was like the first time I met half the team, basically. So. First time coming back, really.
What are your fans love you, that you, in 8 glorious years here, that you've become maybe one of the all-time fan favorites. Are you looking forward to, like, interacting with the Jazz fans again?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a place that's always going to be special to our family and to me, and kind of coming in with the Millers and Dennis and Quinn that first kind of year, and them taking a chance on a 27-year-old and Quinn giving me a chance to play and develop and probably put the belief in me that I can get better at 27 years old and keep getting better. And I think I said it yesterday, like, even like obviously the fans, and with getting rid of Rudy and Donovan and that group that we had, like, this team in the city, like, they deserve a good team. So I'm happy they're playing well. Rudy gave him like 46 picks, so they'll be able to get some picks in the next couple of years. And I love Will, and Will's doing a great job. So I obviously am really happy for him, and I hope we smack him tonight. But every other game, I hope they do really well.
Is it crazy to think there's 2 guys left over from last year's team, Rudy and JC?
I was trying to think. Renee was asking me yesterday. I didn't realize it was 2. I knew it was very minimal. Yeah, pretty crazy, really. I mean, it obviously shows that they were rebuilding, they were retooling, whatever you want to call it, and they've got a plan in place. Obviously, they got some really good players back that have had great years. JC's had a great year. Like I said, great coach, and with all the picks and the young guys they've got, like, they're going to be good pretty soon. So like I said, I'm obviously happy for him, and there's definitely no like ill feeling or anything towards anyone here. So it was, I loved my 8 years here.
I was going to ask you, since when I spoke to you last year, at the time, obviously, it being so close to the trade deadline, you expressed kind of mixed emotions about,
for sure,
you know, seeing that it actually happened.
Yeah.
Now, a year out, I guess, where are you at, kind of, I assume you're in a better place, especially being on a team that's competing for a championship now.
Yeah, I mean, I think even at the time of it happening, it's like I said, I know the business of this. Like, I understand what happened and why it happened, and obviously with my knee, like if I didn't do my knee, am I still here? Like, who knows, kind of thing. But I understand the away from the court side of it. And yeah, obviously I wanted to play here my whole career. Originally, that's what I thought I was going to do. That was the intentions. My family grew up here, obviously, and Jack was born here. But then, yeah, you obviously, things happen. It's the NBA. Like, at the flip side of that, I was lucky to play 8 years for one team. Like, how many players are playing 8 years for the team this day and age with the trades and everything that goes on? So, obviously really happy where we've ended up, and always say like the grass isn't greener or whatever, but like my kids are really happy. Renee's really happy. Obviously on court wise is going really well. The team's really good. The organization's been great for me and my family, and obviously have put a hell of a team together. So, yeah, it's been a good fit for my point in my career, I think.
I don't know if you've had much time to reflect yet or if you've taken that time, but when you think of your time with the Utah Jazz, is there a moment or two that really just immediately come to mind?
I actually said that, like the autism game, the first autism game we did was always, not the first one we did, but the first one that Jacob was diagnosed, and then, I mean, this place is always sold out, but it was packed, and to have Renee there and obviously everything we'd been through those months leading up to when that game was. The playoff, like the Clippers, that first time with Quinn, and probably weren't, I don't know, were we expected to or not, but we end up winning that. The OK series was OKC series. And just like being with Quinn, being with the players I was with, like I said, my family, like my twins think that snow and Christmas is normal, which they're going to get a rude shock when we go to Australia. Like, Utah is like home to them. That's all they knew. That's all they still know. Like, they still talk about it. When I told Millie yesterday that we were going back to Utah, she was like asking to see her school friends and stuff. So it's all they know. And like I said, we had a great time here. We obviously had a hell of a run. At some point, they always come to an end, and ours did. Not by the player's choice, but that's kind of how it works. And like I said, I'm happy they're doing well, and got a lot of assets going forward, and so.
I think when Donovan was here, he said that there's still like a text chain with all you guys.
Yeah.
And Mike and all of you. Do you still keep in touch with all these guys from the last?
Yeah. Years? I mean, you guys know, you guys are around us more than most people. Like, we had a really close group of guys, that kind of core group that was here for 4 or 5 years, and still speak to a lot of them. Like, I still speak to JC a lot. I still speak to Mike a lot, Rudy. Like, all these guys. I saw Boyan a couple of times. Like, it's always, obviously, we didn't get the ultimate goal of, like, getting further than we did when we were all here. But those relationships you build, and, like, there's nothing like it. It's the same with the PTs and all that helped me with my knee and helped me when I first got here. And, like, Derek doing the, like, just all the people that you're around every day for. You spend more time with these guys and your family a lot of the time. So obviously a lot of good relationships that I'll have forever, a lot of relationships Renee will have forever, and even like I said, my kids still talk about their school friends and stuff from here. So it's it's always going to be somebody that's close to us.
Did you ever get that photo of you and JC hugging on the court frame? Because I know you talked about that last year when you guys were warming up.
I did. I've got two of them. I have one for him. I don't know if he ever got it or not. I think pretty soon after that I was traded and moved and everything kind of happened pretty quickly. But I've definitely got mine. It is still like probably one of my favorite photos of being here. Like, I mean, you guys know how close me and him were, and to give him his six-man trophy and I was coming off the bench today. We just had a really good vibe. We obviously got along really well, and him with my kids and my family, and he got along with Renee really well. It was just just something kind of natural that kind of connected when he first got here. And I'm excited. I don't think he's playing. He's not playing, is he?
No.
Would have liked to have put him in a couple of pick and rolls, but yeah, no, it'll be good to see everyone.
Chef Nene.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
Chef Nene.
I was going to say that, but I didn't know if any. It sounds a bit weird.
It does. What's the name
of There you go. Old Joe Ingles. Media availability today.
Vintage Joe.
Vintage Joe not caring what. I mean, just bringing everything up. Nothing is off limits. He will talk about it. And you were saying earlier, too, and I think I agree with you, I think you're going to get a bigger ovation for Joe than you are for Donovan when he was here.
Yeah.
Yeah? Absolutely. Everyone was trying to be nice and cordial, I think, when Donovan was there. Yes, good job. Thank you so much for your time. Some people really excited about it. Other people just kind of, you know, pushing their feelings aside. You know, initially people were like, I'm going to boo. And I'm glad they didn't. But Joe is just one of these lovable characters, man. He's 8 years here, gave his whole heart and soul. The community loved him, talked about how much they loved the community when they were here. That's a big way to Utah's heart. You know, mm-hmm. You start talking about how much you like it here, we will automatically like you.
Yeah, and he's a fan favorite. He's just one of those jazz men that will always kind of stand the test of time and always get an ovation as long as he's in the league. He's going to get a lot of praise, and it helps too that he's on an Eastern Conference team, so we don't see him much. It's his one visit, and I think he's going to be on a team this year where they're going to win the title, and it's, you know, I think a lot of Jazz fans will be pretty excited for Joe if that does happen.
I'm excited for Joe to be back. That'll be fun tonight. I'm interested to see what this team is going to be tonight as well. They're going to have basically the same lineup that they did against the Sacramento Kings when they beat them on Monday. Markkanen out, JC out, Colin Sexton out, right? And so a lot of things are changing for this team across the season, and they've had to just deal with whatever, and that's one of the things they've had to deal with, right? I mean, they've just absolutely had to deal with this insanity of I was thinking about it because I was actually listening to Bowler talk with Hanson Scotty, and when he was like, yeah, and, you know, we appreciated what – Jared Vanderbilt and Malik Beasley. I was like, I forgot those guys were on the team for five. Like, and when they were here, you're going, I'll never forget you. You guys were amazing. Malik, we're going to miss your three-pointers. And then now you go, oh, we'll take Simone Fontecchio. No problem. No problem. Alyssa Pealy has fouled out with 10 seconds left, and the Utah Utes leading 63-61.
When we played the Joe sound,
they were down
seven.
They were down seven with 2.5 minutes left.
They reeled off a 9-0 run during that stretch. And
LSU's in the bonus, and so they've I think that was actually a shot, too. They might have been a shot. So they're shooting two free throws right now, and it's now tied 63. So what's crazy is we're going to take a break here, and then we're going to come back, and you'll have a final. So we'll see if the Lady Utes end up going to the Elite Eight when we come back. More to go around the corner. 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Here we go.
Go get it. Let's go.
That's it.
It's time for the unrivaled NFL Roundup. Premium grade A NFL news from a former NFL quarterback.
What is that?
And the other guy. On 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone.
All right, welcome back. It is unrivaled 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keery. Scott Mitchell out today. Mitch Harper, nice enough to race up here after BYU Pro Day and to fill in for Scott. And we've been just enjoying the heck out of ourselves here watching this Lady Utes versus the LSU Tigers here in the Sweet 16 in Greenville, South Carolina, as the Ute women have just fallen to the LSU Tigers. 66-63 the final, late attempted three. Doesn't happen. They're doing the gritty at center court. There's a lot of pointing and some trash talking there at the end.
A lot of trash talking.
That was wild, right? They just got the Utes just got eliminated in the Sweet 16, and half of the LSU team ran over to the Utah bench and kind of did the gritty on them.
No, that in very tough game for Utah. They stormed back. Reeled off a 9-0 run, had a chance.
They had a lead. They had a lead with 10 seconds left,
and then two missed free throws late. Tough situation.
Yeah.
And the thing is that it was first time since 2006 Utah was in the Sweet 16. You just never know when
That's
you get those
draw.
Moments.
Yeah.
You never know when you get these opportunities. This was a historic team, in Utah women's basketball history, one of the best teams in the country this year, and it's a tough draw too. I mean, to draw a 30-2 team from the SEC, but you were there. And what's crazy too is the refs. I mean, they fouled out Alyssa Pealy and Angel Reese, the two-star players in the game. So had this game gone to overtime, it would have been without the star players. But the Utes fall; they come up short, 66-63.
Heck of a run by the Utes this year. Awesome job. A 3 seed, 4 losses in the season, 27-4.
2 seed. They were the 2 seed.
2 seed, sorry. 2 seed in the tournament, just amazing. And they were up for possibly a 1 seed if they would have had a better run in that Pac-12 tournament. That's how good they were this year. All right, there you go. That's the end of their season, and it was a really, really good one. So let's get into the NFL roundup here, Mitch, shall we?
Let's do it.
So I was looking at this article, and I was like, I'm not a huge fan of a lot of the stuff that the XFL does. I don't think the XFL is going to catch on. I don't think Jack Swarbrick and the brass at Notre Dame are going to have quite enough sway to convince everybody that college football needs to have the sanctity of college needs to be restored, and you can't have the professionalism of begging the NFL to basically have their own league, right? Their own minor league. And I think at some point all these side leagues like the XFL, the USFL, they all at some point go, yeah, we want to be a developmental league for the NFL, maybe even be that new version of the minor leagues. And now it's never going to happen. And I'll tell you what you will never do, Notre Dame. First of all, don't act like your entire image outside of South Bend is not inextricably tied to freaking football and your athletics department and that brand that has gone along with the Golden Dome, right? I mean, it's hilarious to me that they roll up and go, oh, college basketball's just turned into a business. Well, you guys are the only team with an NBC deal.
Yeah.
For the last 100 years or ever. Ever since I've been alive. It's like, dude, you can't act like that. But the XFL has done something that I do think, do what the minor leagues do, and that is test out some rules. Major League Baseball is going to the pitch clock, and it should have been a long freaking time ago. The pitch clock in the minor leagues has been there for a few seasons, and I've always loved it. It makes games still the same 9-inning game that you're used to, but it cuts down on the bullcrap, and it ends up being instead of a 3-hour, 13-minute game, a 2-hour and 31-minute game.
Yeah.
I mean, it's literally the difference that you end up getting. And so here are the things that the XFL is doing that I think that the NFL could actually look at. And touchbacks, okay, on punts. Under the proposal by some of the league, they would be receiving – that the receiving team on a punt would get the ball at the 25 if there's a touchback on the punt. Now, right now, it's a 20 on the punt. It's 25 on the kickoff. That seems weird to have any touchback be any different.
Yeah.
Anywhere. So just do it, right? If a kick returner calls for a fair catch behind the 25-yard line, then you go to the 25-yard line, right? And so if you catch a ball at the 24, you can move up to the 25, right? If you catch the ball at the 10, you can catch it and you can have yourself the ball at the 25. I like that. The most dangerous play in football is the punt return and the kick return, and it's also a waste of time. Like, I'm like, just give a team a ball in the 25.
Oh, yeah.
I hate that. I know getting the kickoff return is exciting, but I'm not that interested in it.
It's the lost phase of the game. I mean, it's just not as big of a factor anymore. It's just not. I mean, it's hard to come up with returns in football anymore. And the days of Devin Hester just feel like they're numbered when it comes to the return game. It's just it's hard to produce that anymore.
So I was looking at this one, and I was trying to figure out. So tripping would become a personal foul, which is also one that you feel like that they should have done a while ago.
Yes.
The tripping penalty doesn't happen very often. I mean, you don't see the ref do the – anytime they have to do a motion with their feet to imply what the show what the penalty was, you just don't get a lot of those, right? And so the tripping penalty become 15 yards because when you trip a guy, it's like blatant cheating. I mean, that's what that's turned into. Holding is one thing because it could be on the line, but when you reach out that leg and trip a guy, make it 15 yards. That makes sense. Possible changes to illegal kicking. Now, if you illegally kick the ball, the current penalty is 10 yards. Under the proposal, it would only be 5 yards. And I was like thinking to myself, when have we seen an illegal kick? When the Giants punter Jamie Gillen got flagged for punting the ball off of a bounce, okay? As soon as the ball hits the turf, I guess you can't. You have to pick it up to kick it. You can't kick it from the turf, which I thought that they did the drop kick. Didn't Doug Flutie make a couple of of drop kick extra points at some point for the Chargers?
I think he did.
Then what are we talking about here? You can't do a drop kick on the punt? Come on, man. Roughing the passer. This is one I'm all for. Making roughing the passer reviewable. Yes. I don't like more reviews, but when they have become so ridiculous like the roughing the passer penalty has become, that Tom Brady one that everybody has in their head when they were playing the Falcons, and it basically killed the Falcons' chance to come back because Tom Brady got a gift of a roughing the passer penalty. I just do not I to go back and to say, hey, you know what? You can review this thing and see if it's there. Other proposals are, Mitch, an emergency third quarterback to be able to dress. See, and I'm not a fan of this. You know what I want? I want like hockey. Do you have a local guy who played quarterback at a junior college? He will suit up for that visiting team, and he will be in the back. He will be in the bowels of the stadium. And when two quarterbacks go down, don't put in a wide receiver who played it in high school. You put in the reserve third-string guy like we put in goalies. It sounds weird, but it's been weird in hockey, and it's actually always been pretty cool. The chance of it happening is very low. It happened, I think, maybe 2 years ago in hockey where a guy who just was like the Zamboni driver, but he's also the reserve goalie, dressed up, and he like made a bunch of saves, and he won the game for the opposing team. Imagine having that guy come in and play some decent football at quarterback.
I would love that. That's the angle I'd like to see too. That signed, sealed, delivered on that. I'm all for that idea. That's a great one.
And then finally, of course, the onside kick that has been proposed by the Eagles. Why do the Eagles have such a love for this? Now, here's what I share with the Eagles. I hate the freaking onside kick. It never works. Yeah. At the pro level, I think the conversion rate is less than 3%. Those aren't good odds. What you're basically telling me is you're going to have to watch a really bad football play, and then we'll get back after these messages from your local sponsors. Like, it is just a massive waste of time. But the Eagles are proposing, the proposal is not any better. You'd be able to opt to keep the ball after you score a touchdown and then try to go for a 4th and 15 from your own 25.
I like that.
I don't like the idea of you just scored. I just scored, but I get the ball now too. Like, that feels like your neighborhood kid who goes, redo. I don't like it. I don't like it. I know it's a tough out, and I don't know what a proposal should be other than just the onside kick, but the onside kick is lame, and then letting a team have the ball after just scoring is also weird. It goes against everything that is holy in football, okay? All right. Those are things I want to see rule change wise. So, those are some of those
good stuff though.
And
I think it's good that they're thinking outside the box with some of these things, because there's got to be new creative ways, because I think a lot of this too ties in with younger audiences and getting their attention and keeping those attention spans, because I think younger people they want to make sure to keep them engaged in sports and have that next generation of sports fans staying engaged in the product. And sometimes you speed up the game a little bit. Some of these things can maybe help that cause, because some of these sporting events, they drag on. I'm never one to say I want less football, but some people, I mean, the NFL's got it down to a science with their clock. But still, if you can find ways to make it even more entertaining, I don't know how that's possible with the NFL, but I think these rules could definitely help that cause.
Yeah, the NFL's not perfect. But don't just make rule changes for the sake of rule changes. By the way, these Capital One commercials during the NCAA tournament, they've really jumped the shark here. Here's the cast now, because it used to just be like Chuck and Samuel Jackson.
Spike Lee.
Then they threw in Jim Nantz last year, right, for a good measure. And you go, okay. Now that I just watched a commercial starring Chuck, what's his name? I just said it. Oh, Spike Lee, and then
Kenny the Jet.
Kenny the Jet. And also Jim Nantz. And then also Jennifer Garner, because, you know, that's her thing. And then also Willie Nelson. That's where we've gotten. Samuel, it's a nine-person cast now on these. That's terrible. It's just ridiculous. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we have a ton to get through in just a couple of minutes here before we get you ready for this Jazz and Bucks pregame. We'll have our two-minute drill. By the way, Jeff Donovan's going to be in studio with us on Tuesday. This happened. He's been coming on with us the last couple of weeks. Jeff and his team want to get you that ERC refund, and he's going to be live on our show on Tuesday between 3 and 6 to tell you how. Get that refund from the government for that ERC. That's the Employee Retention Credit. We'll come back. Two-minute drill next right here, 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone.
Attention. This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keurig.
Attention.
With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
Presented by G2G Bars. This is 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone.
Welcome back. It's Unrivaled 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell normally with me. He is on the road. And Mitch Harper, nice enough to fill in. Mitch, I've had fun today, man. As usual, I have tons of fun with you all the time.
Always had a great time. And, you know, tough loss today for the Utah women's team falling in the Sweet 16 to LSU. But that was a heck of a game to watch.
I mean, that was fun.
That was seriously one of the... Just that's what you like about March Madness. Just a down to the wire finish. Two good teams going battling for 40 minutes, and
I'm just shocked when teams like come back. They have no chance to come back. Yeah. I mean, it was 2:30 left, and they were down 7.
And then you thought they almost to a T replicate what UCLA did.
Yes.
Storm back. You thought, oh, they're going to take it over now. They're going to win the game, and then
make it close, and then they end up losing.
Yep. And then the team that got down. They came roaring back and found a way to squeak it out. And tough loss for the Utes.
Full
coverage on KSL Sports.
Yeah, KSLSports.com. Michelle Bodkin's doing the write-up right now. JJ's there in South Carolina. And so you're going to have the TV coverage on top of all that. Yeah, massive deal for this Utah women's team. They had a fantastic year. Let's fire up the old two-minute drills. We get things going here and get you ready for Jazz basketball tonight. Our two-minute drill, we just bring you as many stories as we can. I wanted to read something from Jack Swarbrick, though, real quick. The AD out of Notre Dame. When he grandstanded and pulled this... you know, the pearl clutching that it, like by these huge programs? Look, we've always been vocal in the conviction that student-athletes should be allowed to capture the value and use of their name, image, and likeness. By the way, you have to say that. Because... the rule by Congress was if you limit these guys in any way, you're going to be in trouble. So they can't come across like they don't want these guys to get NIL money. For one simple reason, other students are allowed to do it, and college students who have talented skills as a musician or an artist, we don't begrudge them for making money. However, education is the most important part of what they're going to receive here at the University of Notre Dame. Really?
It's a joke. It screams to me that Notre Dame is getting worried that they're falling behind. Honestly, that's how I read the story. I mean, you pair it up with you lost Brian Kelly to LSU, you lost Tommy Rees to Alabama as the OC, and it's tough sell to get guys to South Bend already, and then it's probably even tougher when these SEC schools, they just are so much more committed in terms of donating and NIL deals that... maybe the NIL collectives at Notre Dame are not as passionate as you would think for the Irish who have such a national following. It just feels like a guy that's upset that the Irish are falling behind and that their world of always being near the top, maybe it's coming to an end. I don't know. I think Marcus Williams is a good coach, but this did scream like Notre Dame arrogance if I've ever seen it.
Well, you know what I really hate about this? Was this idea too, because they go... we urge Congress to protect the NCAA's ability to regulate. The worst person in the room to regulate things is the NCAA, I think we've learned over the years.
Terrible.
Right? Awful. And so do not call on the NCAA to regulate anything because they are not capable.
The new president goes on CBS last night and is already saying They're waiting for the government to make a decision on
it. Get out of here.
There are the new NCAA president is already resorting to the old president's ways. Well, it's getting much the same.
I know. We were talking with one of the ASU writers yesterday, and he goes, I said, when are we going to find out what the punishments are going to be from, you know, the fallout from all that? He goes, it's the freaking NCAA. They'll do it whenever they want.
Yeah.
It'll be at whatever strength of a they will come in on their timeline, make no sense. Like, there's no precedent that they go off of. They just go off of, like, bad feelings and if they don't like you that day. So good for them. Awesome job by the NCAA. Can't wait. Notre Dame and the NCAA, like, it's like Oreos and milk. Go together, man. San Diego has announced a retirement, but their football coach actually said that he was fired. So Dale Lindsay, I always love this because this feels like what happened with Jim Boeheim, right? But only on a better scale. I love this. So San Diego's head coach Dale Lindsay. Now this is this is FCS football.
Same place where Harbaugh started.
Same place where Kincaid played as well. Yep. And he goes, I did not effing retire. It's like, do you have a statement for the press? Yeah, I have one. I did not effing retire. They fired me. Instead, they were like so flowery. And they're like, we just want to thank Dale Lindsay and just congratulate him into moving into this part of his life.
This spoke to my soul as someone who covers BYU extensively. BYU's never fired anyone, allegedly. But it's always like retirement, setting him off. I love this because, like, there's probably been so many BYU coaches in the past
that probably want to say something.
They go, I got canned.
Look, we'll pay you the rest of your contract, but you can't say anything about what happened. That's it.
Oh, it's perfect. I love that when a coach's cousin says the real story.
Mitch, you're a Lakers fan, weirdly enough. True or false, LeBron says he wants to return before the regular season ends. Is that a false statement? Or is he lying to us, or is that a real thing?
False. It's a lie.
Okay.
I think he's going back to the playoffs. He'll be in for the play-in game.
Luka got fined $35,000 after he did the money sign to the referees after making that bad, bad late-game call. Mark Cuban wants the whole thing reviewed.
Protest.
He's going to protest the score, and he threw the old money at the ref. I love that.
Yeah. Call out these NBA refs. They need to be under fire more.
I just like go watch the Donaghy documentary on Netflix. It is wild. Okay, Mitch, thanks for hanging out today.
You bet, man.
Christian, fantastic job today, bro. Thanks. Jeremy was out and Scott was out, and so we got through this thing just fine with the help of these guys. All right, for Mitch and for Christian, you've got Jazz pregame coming up right here. Stay dialed in. It's the Jazz Radio Network 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.